We're doing our class on the Jewish home. Our topic today is going to be the relationship between a husband and wife, exclusivity, and the implications. How do we view friends? How do we view in-laws? How do we view relatives? How do we view children? So obviously everyone has their place in our life. Everyone knows you have your friend, you have your neighbor, you have your childhood friend, you have your cousin who you did all the pranks with, your parents. We have all kinds of relationships in our life, and they all have to undergo a transition when we get married. People sometimes say, I'm the same guy, I just got married, I got better. No, you're not the same guy. You're in a new place in life. And I want to begin perhaps with the easiest example. My wife and I were newly married. We were married all of 6 hours. It was 6:30 in the morning in the Frankenthal house, the first morning of us getting married, and the phone rings. 6:30 in the morning, okay, the phone rings. Sometime later that day, I actually went to hear the voicemail, and it's the mother of a friend of mine. She knew that at 7 o'clock, davening started in yeshiva. I had had the same number when I was in yeshiva. I had had a Bezek phone line. I took it with me when we got married, so she knew the time to catch me before I got married was at 6:30 in the morning. She did nothing wrong, only she didn't know I was married. So I went on the voicemail. We got married at the end of the month of Teves. We got married 17 days before Tu B'Shvat. So I got on the voicemail and I said, thank you very much for calling. We are going to be very busy the next 2 weeks. We will only listen to messages after Tu B'Shvat, but feel free to leave a message. We will listen to it in 17 days. Tu B'Shvat came. I went on the voicemail again. I said, that worked so well. Purim is in a month. I said, thank you so much for calling. We will be checking our messages in Purim. Feel free to leave a message. And on Purim, I switched the message to Pesach 1 month later. And by the time those 3 months were up, no one was calling us at 6:30 in the morning. No one was calling us, period. The joke in the family was, don't call them. They'll only listen to your message in a month. But it was mission accomplished. Why? Because when you start out marriage, I'm talking about pre-cell phone days. We didn't own cell phones back then. My friends didn't even have a basic line at home. There were people who lived in this neighborhood who used the payphone out there. When I was dating, I'd make calls on a payphone. We were talking about a different generation, okay? 15 years ago.
Just kids.
We come back to what's the idea? When people get married, so their friends very often don't realize that they're in a different place. When you get married, you have to work on building your relationship with your spouse. Imagine you come home at night, you're sitting for dinner with your wife, and she's on her smartphone, and she's having a fantastic conversation with all her friends, if I could call them that, on Facebook. Her coworkers, who she spent all day chatting with on Facebook as they were sitting one cubicle next to another. So you're sitting at the dinner table trying to talk to her in just a second. Every so often she includes you in a chat. Now you're part of that funny joke too, but you're sitting all alone for dinner. That's marriage. That's a virtual marriage. So today this challenge has become tenfold. You go to a restaurant, you watch couples and families sitting together, everyone's on their smartphone. They're not with one another. So there's certain advice that I've gotten tremendous feedback on. One piece of advice that I tell couples is, the first 2 weeks you're married, when you sit down for dinner, shut the phones. Shut the house phone. Shut the cell phone. Be with one another. And I always say, I would tell you to do it for 3 months. I would tell you to do it all of married life. You won't listen to me. So I'll tell you, try it for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, where you discover what it means to sit with one another, without these distractions, you yourself will say, let's do it for another month and another month. You'll develop it as long as you can. But I'll tell you, try it for 2 weeks. And so far, many couples have come back and told me that it helped them a lot, and Bemet, they took it upon themselves that at nights they get home 7, 8 o'clock, they shut the phones, they're with one another. When I started saying this 10 years ago, most of the class wasn't on Facebook. most of the class didn't have smartphones. The world has evolved. I'm saying in the 10 years I'm teaching this class, we're on a different planet. I'm saying today it's become more imperative than ever. But I want to take this to the next level. This is the simplest example. But the truth is that you're trying to develop the most meaningful relationship in your life. The greatest satisfaction you will have in life, for most people, will be from that relationship you can develop. It will be all-encompassing. It will affect anything and everything you do. It will make life miserable or beautiful, and at times both. It's not mutually exclusive. Marriage will sometimes make you miserable and will sometimes make you elated. Marriage does both. You have someone who's close to you, and sometimes things are painful and sometimes things are wonderful. But it gives you the opportunity to develop the most wonderful thing in your life, and it does not work on autopilot. And one of the first challenges that people have today is knowing to set limits. This is my spouse. I'll give you a small example. You're in the bedroom. Conversation in the bedroom is supposed to be intimate. How would you feel if the next morning your wife posted it on Facebook? My husband said the funniest thing in bed last night.
It sounds like something straight out of a bad movie that we all saw about 2 years ago. Wait, it's on the cloud. How do we do a surgery on a duck? Abraham, I will tell you the movie later.
Jesse, I did not see the movie.
I did not either.
Okay.
He was in the army.
What's the movie talking about?
Okay. I'm with Leo. What's a movie? Okay. Thank you.
Anytime. My wife died before. It's wonderful.
There is something very sacred and beautiful about the relationship you can develop with your wife. But it has become monumentally harder in our generation. And so you have to approach it with the idea, I'm building something amazing here. And that means there has to be fidelity, not only in the areas of the bedroom, but also in our conversation, in our relationship. It's not right that you call your parents and you start sharing with them all kinds of things that happened between you and your wife, whether it was a fight or it was something nice. There's something to be said about your own relationship. People who share their frustrations with their parents are very often unable to connect to their wife. When people call me up and say, I want to discuss my marriage with you, I say, I'm willing to talk to you, but I want you to think first if it's necessary. Because you have a sacred relationship, and even though you'll say, I'm talking to the rabbi, it's okay, he's not going to squeal, he's not going to tell anyone. That's hopefully true. But from your perspective, you have just taken something that was sacred between you and your wife, and you spoke to someone else about it. Bottom line, I'm someone else. It's funny, my wife sometimes gets approached by women who tell them, they start talking to her about their pregnancy, and she's looking at them like she has no idea they were pregnant. And I was the first to know, because right after the ultrasound, they called up with all kinds of shyness, but they didn't tell me I could tell my wife, so she doesn't know. So we had a situation like 7-8 years ago where we were both praying for a certain couple, alumni of the Machon, who couldn't have kids for years, that they were married. And then he told me that they were pregnant, and he didn't give me permission to tell my wife. So we're sitting there making our list of who we're davening for on Rosh Hashanah, and I see their names on my wife's list, and my wife is telling me, you know, I could cry thinking about them. They're married so many years, it must be so tough entering another Rosh Hashanah, and they haven't yet conceived. I'm really going to daven for them, and I'm like, I can't even smile. Can't say anything. They didn't give me permission to talk. But that doesn't matter. At the end of the day, there's something sacred. I tell people, if I've given you good advice that you're going to use in the bedroom, and things, sometimes couples have things that it doesn't work smoothly in the bedroom. So I tell them, don't say, Rabbi Frankenthal said, my name does not belong in your bedroom. When you're in the bedroom, don't mention other people. You're talking to one another, about one another. Don't talk about other people in the bedroom. Other people's names shouldn't even come up. I don't belong there. Talk about one another. Compliment her. Talk to her about your relationship, about what's meaningful to the two of you. But this isn't only in the bedroom. When we build a relationship, we have to be able to build our own relationship. There has to be exclusivity. And often people enter marriage and they're unprepared for this. Now, this includes girls. It can be you'll get married and you'll discover that your wife is very into chatting with her friends. And you're second fiddle. I recommend this be something that couples discuss, even during the dating. Because very often girls haven't even been exposed to the idea. I say you're on a date, you're serious about the girl. How could you look at your cell phone during the date? How could you be on your cell phone during the date? What's going on here? Yeah, but I'm on a date 6 hours long. Explain something. You're the prime minister. You're an ambulance driver. The world can't last without you. Explain to me. You're on the stock market. You have to get the alert. The market might be crashing. What's so critical? Why do you have to be online? You're with the person. It's the most important thing in your life. So building this exclusivity is not easy. I wonder if you guys have any time that you do it. I'll tell you, there's one time you do it. It's called Shabbos. There's one time a week where you actually disconnect from the world. So we have to develop the relationship so that, number one, when we speak about friends, they know their place. And our loyalty is first to our spouse. And we have to develop time with our spouse that is exclusive. Now let's go on to step two. How would you feel if your wife had a boyfriend she was very friendly with, and she told you, "Don't worry, it's over between us. There's nothing. It's an old flame. I'm just being nice to him." What happened if she had five boyfriends? What happened if those boyfriends gave you the most expensive gifts for your wedding? What happens if every time she took out the Shabbos china, she would say, "I love this china. Frank gave it to me." How would you enjoy eating from that china? How would it feel?
Trashy.
What would happen if she had a piece of jewelry that she put on that she got from an ex-boyfriend? How would you feel about that? So now, magnify whatever you're thinking by 50 times, and that's how she feels when you say something positive or when you retain old friends on your Facebook. There's no reason, there's no reason that your old female friends are still connected to you on your Facebook.
The time, friends or girlfriends?
But they're still people, you know?
That's what she'll tell you about Frank. He's just a person.
Frank was a boyfriend, though.
Yeah, but he's a friend who's a boy. He's not a boyfriend. How many times have I heard that line? We grew up together. It's not like that. So I'm just asking, how would you feel if she gave you the same answers?
And you're eating from this church.
Right?
The house would have a robbery.
You know, Bob and I were friends for many years. You don't just erase that. He gave me this china, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's a gorgeous china. I always love the china. I love the china. I don't love Bob. Can't you hear that? I only have feelings for you. Michael, you have nothing to worry about. It's dead. I'm telling you, it's dead. So I've left him on as a Facebook friend. He's a friend. He happens to be a boy. It doesn't work that way. Bottom line, part of the feeling of exclusivity that we're supposed to give our spouse, even if I know in my heart of hearts there's nothing doing there, it's irrelevant. I have a responsibility to give my spouse the confidential feeling that I'm only with her and there's nothing else that interests me and there's no one else that interests me. I am human. Right, I'm human. That's exactly why I will not have female friends on my Facebook. And you'll tell me, what about my old Aunt Susie? Okay, your old Aunt Susie is your old Aunt Susie, but your cousin Veronica is not your old Aunt Susie, and there's no reason she's there. Look, where you draw the line is difficult, but I would rather you err on the side of caution, because what you're really doing is you're giving the message, you're the only one that's important in my life. And that message is very hard to convey. It sounds like it's easy. You will see that many people can live a decade with their spouse and not feel like they've successfully conveyed that message. That is a tremendous frustration that many spouses feel. Ask the average husband, do you love your wife alone? Yes, she's very special in my wife. Question two, do you think that she feels that she is as special as you feel she is? And most people will say no. Ask a woman, how special is your husband to you? Then ask her, have you succeeded in conveying that to him? Do you think he knows how much you feel of him? And the answer that most people would say is no. It's not easy to get your spouse to feel like they're very special in your life. It sounds easier than it really is. Well, this is an important step. It's an important step in really developing a relationship. Let's move on. Your wife will ask you. It will come up. If she doesn't say it explicitly, she'll say it not so explicitly. Who do you love more, your mother or me? And you're going to be a classical male and you're going to say, it's not the same thing. They don't contradict. They don't even overlap. There are different types of love. And you're making a mistake. The answer is very simply, I love you more. What's the question? End of story. There's no discussion.
Are you lying?
No, we all know it's two different types of love.
Right, okay, fine.
But don't go telling her that. What she has to hear is you're the only one. That's what she has to hear. Now, I want to touch on that just a second. It's not fair. You shouldn't quote movies. We're trying to talk about things even though it's not all exact Torah, but there's an element of purity here. No, I'm serious. Coming back to this point, lying is a very interesting thing in marriage. We will have a whole class, at least one if not two, on the whole concept of telling the truth and telling lies within a marriage. But I want to point something out. You will come home that Friday night to a Shabbos table set nicely and a chicken that smells bad. It will happen. Your wife will try out a salad where you will have to hold yourself back from vomiting. It will happen that your wife decided to try a kugel and she got confused. She thought it was salt, she put in sugar. She thought it was one spice, she put in another, and suddenly you discover.
What if you're not a good liar, though?
Give me a second. I didn't say you should lie, but I want to zoom forward, okay? One of the challenges that happens when you guys date very often is that you think a lot about your relationship with her as your wife, and you don't think enough about her as the mother of your kids. So let's zoom forward 10 years. You have a sweet child that comes home, and they say, Abba, Abba, look at my drawing. And they give it to you. And you take the drawing, and you're not sure which side is up. So you hold it the way the kid gave it to you. And you're trying to, wow, the blue on this picture is exceptional. And the girl says, Abba, do you see the flower I made in your honor? And you're looking, is it on the top side of the picture, the bottom side of the picture? And you go, you used a lot of colors. I see you put a lot of love into this picture. Are you going to sit down with me and show me what everything is? Sure, Abba, come. So you're going to sit down and she's going to show you the flower and you're going to go, wow. Now I want to ask you, are you lying?
Yes.
No. You're not.
You're trying to make the field kick.
You are not. That's not true. You are looking for what to say positive. You're not, you don't think it's a beautiful flower. I agree. But you are looking, you're going to say you used a lot of colors to make me happy. You worked very hard to make me a nice picture. It's very special that you made something for me. You're going to hang it up in your office for a day or two. Eventually, you'll get tired of hanging it up. But the first few times, it'll be very exciting for you to hang up a kid's painting. And I remember I was learning in yeshiva. I visited my cousin. His kids made me pictures. I had it hanging over my bed all my time in yeshiva because it was the only kid's pictures I ever had.
And like, how do you deal with when your kid sees that the picture's not hung up anymore?
Pause. Thursday night. No. It's a good question. It's a good question. No. I don't want to go on tangent. We have to conclude. But once you brought that up, part of what we're going to learn about is how to be truthful, not how to lie. And it's a question of how you look at someone else. And you guys will have opportunity to do this in real life when someone will call you and ask you, what can you tell me about Jesse? Now you're I'm very serious. I'm not joking. I'm very serious. Now you have a choice. Okay, let's leave Jesse out of this. Jesse, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have used your name. Okay. They're gonna call you about Frank, okay? So you could say, Jesse, I'm not talking about you. You could say, Frank is such an Ashkenazi, he could never follow the davening, and standing next to him as he keeps on messing up is really frustrating during davening. It confuses everyone. We all try to stay away. You could say, Frank is a little bit small-minded. Whenever class comes up, he's still putting his stuff together halfway into class. He hasn't yet gotten his act together. Or you could say, Frank is the nicest guy in the class. Frank would lend you everything he owns. Frank will stay after class for a half hour to help clean up. Frank is the type of guy that when we go on a class trip, he's asking, what can I help with beforehand? What can I help afterwards? They're all true. Question is, what do I focus on?
Okay, but
so in marriage, that's where I have to focus. It's not about lying. It's about being able to tell the truth, being able to look with a good eye. That's a tool we spoke about last class. We're still going to talk about it. Okay, we are in the middle of talking about exclusivity in our relationships, in our marriage. We are not done. We're basically at the halfway mark, to be continued, Bezrat Hashem, next week. We still have to talk about children. How do children fall into it? We have to talk about what psychologists call the triangle. We have to talk about the better other. There are a lot of concepts still to discuss. We're only halfway done.